welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for September 16th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and sitting next to me in the dugout at Jingu Stadium is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Well, I'm doing good. We should be sitting over on the other end of the dugout in the Coco Ballantyne special seat.
The Coco seats, huh? Yeah, we should be sitting over there, but I think they're going to kick us out pretty soon anyway, no matter where we sit.
Yeah.
Very historic night tonight. You got to see it in person. I got to see it on video. Coco Ballantyne hits his 56th and then comes back in his next at bat and hits number 57 to break the single season Japan home run mark here at Jingu Stadium. What a magnificent night.
It was.
What were your first thoughts when you saw the ball fluttering out toward the...
Well, it was sailing. Yeah, the first one was a shot. I was really excited. I think a lot of us reporters were really excited because, well, I hate to say I'm a Swallows fan, so that was exciting for me. I like Coco's a great guy, but I think all the reporters were excited and cheering because now they can have their lives back. we've been following this thing for a while, and for the beat reporters, it's been a real long time.
Yeah, for them too. And I know Jason Conspire of the Japan Times has been following Coco. I've been seeing him on TV after most of the games here, just stuck in Coco's back pocket, waiting for the chance to interview him and stuff. So, well, that's part of the things that we're going to talk about on this history-making day, where we have an interview with Kira Kaehue. I butchered it.
Kira Kaehue.
All right, you say it much better than I do, of the Hiroshima Carp, and we're going to discuss Mr. Golden Arm and more. So the bases are juiced. Let's get started.
We ring the bases!
All right, so Vladimir Ballantyne gets number 56 off of Daiki Enokita in the first inning with a man on second base. And I went through some of the home runs that he has hit this year, and I wrote down everything, but of course that changed. He had... Now with the 57 home runs, he has 31 solo home runs and 26 with runners on base.
Okay.
He's got 8 three-run home runs, 1 grand slam, and now 17 two-run home runs.
Uh-huh.
31 solo home runs, and he's driven in a bunch of runs here.
He did.
He
moved up to 120 RBIs today and puts him 5 short of... Tony Blanco, the
guy we used to call T60, and now we're going to be saying C60, I think.
I think we'll see 66 maybe.
And, nice.
Anyway, so yeah, Tony Blanco keeps getting an RBI single. I think he had a sack fly today, or something like that. You know, he just keeps getting along at RBI every game, seems. So it's hard to catch, but the 3-1 shot in one night helped Coco make up some ground there.
Yep. You know, as he hit this thing, and I saw it soaring out to center, right center, or left center.
Left center.
And he sticks his arms in the air, and I'm like, you know what? People say this all the time, but it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, because really, after, and I'm sure you saw the picture, after Coco hit 55, I was here the other night, and I was walking by the dugout trying to get in line for interviews, and he popped out of the dugout right when I came by. So I said, hey, buddy, and the first thing he says to me is, hey, Poppy, how you doing?
That's
why he's so well-liked, and I think he said in the press conference after the game here tonight, he said... People thought it, or think it's time for a change. It's time for a new age. It's time for new thinking.
I think a little bit of that is him.
Exactly. That's going to be my point. I think because of you, because I didn't feel this when Alex Cabrera got to 55. I didn't feel this when Tuffy Rhodes got to 55, although I did feel it more for him because he was well-liked. But I don't think Alex Cabrera was the kind of... I don't think he liked being in Japan and liked playing as much, and I don't think Japan liked him being here and him playing the way he played
Alex Cabrera, the exception of Taiwan because they had earthquakes, he liked wherever he was that was in a batter's box and where he was getting paid to hit.
Yeah.
That was his... He was good at it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is... it is, you know, he said it was time for a change, and I think it is time for a change, and I think it's been 12 years, it's been 11 years since Cabrera tied it, and anybody made a real serious chase. So I think everybody was ready for a change. It's nice that Sadahara Oh, the chairman of the SoftBank Hawks, who set the record in 1964, comes out and says, you know, I'm cheering for him to, you know, to see how far he can go, because this is a great thing.
Yeah, and Oh came out after he hit the 55th home run and said, yeah, I think it's just a matter of time now. But, yeah, I would have liked to have seen him say something a little bit earlier.
Well, he avoided making comments on it pretty early. He didn't start really talking until he got to about 52. I think when he hit a bunch of them against the Giants a couple weeks ago. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, 1964, that's a special year for me. I wasn't quite born yet, but that is the year that I was born. I wasn't born when O actually set the mark. But the thing is that everybody keeps disregarding Tuffy Rhodes, and we heard it again tonight in the press conference. They said, you tied O's record, and I just wanted to blurt out. Mr. Rhodes and Mr. Cabrera also tied the record. And
it's Japan.
And they say, you know, it's 49 years since. I mean, no, it's not.
Well, the record is 49 years old.
Right, right. But it
nobody's
was tied.
Beat it. Yeah, nobody's beat it in 49
years. It was tied
years.
As recently as 2002. That stuff gets swept under the carpet, and, you know, that's what happens. All right, well, let's listen to a quick clip from the press conference.
Well, I can say, I mean, I heard a lot of story about back a couple years ago when two people have a shot to get there, but they never could make it, get it done. I can't say too much about that because I wasn't there, so I don't know. But what I can tell and say now, I think it's all the fans, everybody start thinking different now. I think they start thinking a new generation. They think it was the right time to move on, to let somebody show what they can do. And I'm happy and blessed to be in that situation. And like I said before, I mean, I did it, and I don't care if next year somebody else come and hit more than me. I mean, that's part of the baseball. That's more fun about it. Because you put a record, but records are for break. Records not going to be there forever. So I'm just happy and blessed to be in this situation. And if somebody come and hit more than I do, I will be happy for them too.
Yeah, Jim Allen, good news. Coco, you know, you talked a little bit about being here when you're making history, but really you are a part of changing history. How does it feel to be in to be the man at that point, this point of time for Japanese baseball?
Well, I can say, I mean, it's a blast. It's a blast from God to get me here, to give me the opportunity to make history, and at the same time, like you said, change history, change the way how the Japanese thinking about the record. So I think it's a blast for me to be in this situation. I don't even have words to say.
John Gibson with the Daily Yomiuri. Coco, you've had a great season. You're having a great season still. You're in the conversation for MVP, but you're going to wake up tomorrow and your team is in last place. How are your emotions dealing with that?
I mean, we really, as a team this year, we hasn't played at the level we capable to play. Like, every day I wake up in the morning, first thing is in my mind is how I'm gonna help my team win a ball game. I mean, even we in the last place, I think we never give up. So I think it has to be something crazy happens if we make the climax. That's anything is possible. But I mean, all I can say, I mean, that's me. I mean, I just try to help my team. I try to get my teammate better every day. And to be in the conversation for the MVP, it's something very special, because even our team is not in the competition. and to have my name throw it out there, it's a blast.
Coco, you said earlier that there were times where you were trying too hard to get to 56. So once you actually got there, how much different was the second at bat tonight compared to the first at bat tonight, knowing that you already got it done?
Was a relief, you know. When I hit that 56, it was like I just get the heavy weight off my back. So from that moment to the next AB, to the next one, I just feel like it's a brand new season. It's just my first couple AB of the year.
Joining us now is Jason Kosker of the Japan Times, and I just wanted to invite you on the show to just get your opinion about you've been following Coco around for how long has it been?
Oh, God, I think I've been around him since about 50.
Number 50,
you don't look that old. I've aged well. Some of us haven't.
So you started following him around game by game. How's it been for you? How's it been doing all that with you?
Well, first, thanks for having me.
Thank
long
you
time listener,
coming.
First time caller.
Well, step out of the shadows, son.
It's been fun actually to watch him go through this, and it's actually been kind of eye opening because when he had 50 or so, even before he had 50, he was still Coco. He was still a very kind of happy go lucky. He's kind of nothing changed, but you could see, even though he kept saying that I don't feel any pressure. Once he got to 53, you could see it. You could kind of see it was starting to get to him at least a little bit, and he was starting to think about it at least a little bit. Once he got to 54, you could see it in the swing. He was swinging for home runs. He was trying to hit every ball out of the park, and he was getting frustrated at the plate. And so it was kind of interesting to watch that, you know, duality of to watch him transform, basically watch him walk into the spotlight. Because he told me on numerous occasions that this is the first time he's ever experienced anything like this. And to go through something like that for your first time while you're trying to do this, and then also balancing not being so happy because your teammates aren't doing well, it was interesting to watch.
Yeah, I didn't say thanks for joining us on the program, but I do appreciate you stopping by. You had to file a story here, and you're probably pretty tired.
Wow.
But thank you for coming on and talking about it. Now, what was the biggest thing for you? You said you saw in his swing that he was pressing a little bit, but what I saw on TV, because I did get to go because I don't get to cover games anymore, but I'm not gonna whine about it. I saw him chasing a lot of, looking at a lot of breaking balls over the plate, and then also taking some fastballs because he didn't expect them.
Yeah, I think he told himself that he wasn't going to get a first pitch fastball. I think you really saw it in the first Carb game. Maeda grooved one right down the middle for him. Then he threw him a slider that was basically all over the plate. I think he was just—he told me, he said, "I didn't expect him to throw me a fastball on the first pitch." And I think he just—he got himself wound up that they're not going to throw me anything. They're not going to pitch me. And I think the Yokohama series really frustrated him after he got that whatever home run it was against them. I forget what number it was, but they started walking him and they started running away from him. And he said that that's what they always do to me. And I think that series kind of messed him up for the rest of this chase because he felt like he wasn't going to get anything to hit, and these guys were giving him stuff that he could hit in the first pitch, and he just wasn't doing it.
Right.
And what I mean by pressing, I think you saw it a lot in that Carp series too. I think after a while, the pressure got to him, and he was just going after home runs and just swinging at almost anything that went up there. And I think when you saw number 55, that was just Coco's swing. It was nice and easy. He wasn't trying to hit a home run.
Yeah. Just,
and it went out. And I think really 56 tonight, although Inokita served it
he
up.
He crushed
to
that man.
On a
he crushed that
fire.
Cookie. That was a cookie, and he made crumbs out of it. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And Inokita was just trying to get it over with. He didn't want to pitch with all those people cheering against him. So he went ahead and got it out of the way.
Well, I would joke that he didn't mind at all one bit being part of history.
He says, here it is.
Looked like, wow. You know how they say sometimes when the other team's fans are cheering against, you know, cheering against you. I just pretend they're cheering for me. Well, he had all the Tigers fans on their feet.
Yeah, so it's Daiki Inokita of the Tigers who gave up the home run, and I have a quote from him. He said, "In ordinary circumstances, I wouldn't avoid pitching to Ballantyne, and this is a competitive situation, so he got me this time. Honestly, though, I didn't think the second one would go out. The count was 3-0, but I still went at him." Now, I don't know how you could say that, because that ball was gone. Maybe he thought it was foul.
Foul ball, yeah. It missed being fouled by about 5 feet.
And also missed tearing the head off of somebody out there. I mean, that thing was crushed, too. There was a stewardess serving drinks on that thing.
You got to give it to him. He pitched to him.
Yeah.
I think of all the guys, I would say Nomura, to me, had probably some of the best at-bats against Ballantyne. Nomura didn't give in. Nomura didn't give him anything. That it was, you know, if he was going to hit it out against Nomura, he was going to have to work. He just gave Nomura the cart. I was really impressed at the way he pitched against him.
I think, well, when Jim and I were just discussing this, that in the press conference that you were also a part of, he said that a lot of people were telling him that they think it was time for a new home run or single season home run king, and it was a time for a new age. And I think part of it was because it was him, and you could see that the pitchers were going at him. I don't think anybody really ran away from him. I saw some things on Twitter where people were saying, well, I think they were using language that I won't use here, but I think everybody in every...
Sinks a lot.
in each situation where the game wasn't so much on the line, I think they were going at him. And when situations that would normally call for him to be walked, they walked him. I don't think it was anything out of the ordinary. I think everybody pitched him.
That's what you're supposed to. You're not going to give it to him.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think, well, the Carp, it was kind of interesting because when the Carp games, all the Carp games were blowouts. And when he hit the record home run, the Carp fans were elated, you know, when they walked him, they were mortified. And it seems like last night when they wouldn't pitch to him, the Tigers fans, I think a lot of Tigers fans, it's not so much that they wanted him to see the home run as much as they wanted to see that challenge. They didn't want to see their team wimp out.
Well, I think they wanted to see both. I think they wanted to see them go at Coco, and I think they wanted to see Coco hit a home run. It's the Michael Jordan thing. You want to see him score 40 points and your team beat him. You know, I don't think they were shying away from him. So
it's good to see.
Yeah, it was a great thing. It was a great thing. Fantastic night here at Jingu. I don't know where O hit his 55th or Alex Cabrera, and I think we're going to have some work to do, and we'll look that up.
Alex Cabrera hit his at Cebu.
Okay.
And I don't know where Tuffy hit his.
Okay. All right. So we can.
But I've been chasing. I've been waiting for this 56th home run for 12 years now.
See, I think Tuffy got it at Osaka Dome.
I think so too. I kind of.
I've seen about 12 games where people have been trying to hit the 56th, and I finally got one. I felt like Coco said. I felt like a big weight was lifted off my shoulders. You know, I can go back to
off yours and everyone. All those pitchers who gave up 55.
Yeah. If any of them are dead now, probably their souls are free to go to heaven. They've been in limbo.
So check it. I think that I want to say Matsuzaka gave up one to Tuffy, but I'm not sure about that at all.
I know Cabrera's was to Katsunori Okamoto, the Buffaloes at Cebu Dome, because I was hoping to get to that game from the tennis and didn't make it.
All right. Well, I looked at some of Coco's numbers now. I think it's no surprise that he has always, from his first season on, tried to cut down on the strikeouts. 131 times he struck out in his first year in 550 at-bats, and last year was 90. The lights went out.
92
in, more, I forgot the number of at-bats, 422, and now with more at-bats this season, he's only at 90.
Yep.
So I think cutting down on striking out has really helped him, but what else have you seen about his game that's changed that helped him get to this record?
Well, he's done Blanco. You know, he's gone to the opposite field a lot this year. I mean, that, you know, when he got this hit yesterday, the Swallows had been, you know, he had was in a situation where he was either hitting home runs and getting close to the record or tying it, and the team was just getting its head beat in. And then all of a sudden, they're losing again, and he's not hitting home runs, so in the second game of the Tiger series, he shoots that, you know, he's been getting pitched everything away, except for the maybe a couple of swinging strikes he had inside and so on. But most of the pitches, he's trying to dive outside, and he finally said, oh, well, I'll shoot one. I'm still leading the league in batting. You know, I can do this and do something for my team. And he was really buoyant about doing that. So I think that has been his whole season, has been doing what he can to help the team, and in the process, everything's come together for him. He's a completely different hitter. He's become a completely different hitter in Japan than he was in America.
Yeah, I've seen him at least have a better understanding of the strike zone. I've seen him stop himself and lay off of a lot of pitches that are down and away. I think he has a better understanding of the pitchers here and how they're trying to get him out and what their tendencies are in terms of getting them out. And I think, obviously, with the experience he's had the first couple years, have poured into what's happening now. Some people might say that the low-impact ball and the change that was made is impacting the number of home runs, and that might be the case. And he also plays in a homer-friendly park, mm-hmm. but I don't think that those things have any or that much bearing on the fact that he's on the pace to hit he's still on
66.
The pace to hit 66 home runs, and he might get mm-hmm. there. In fact, do you think he can surpass?
I think if you put him in a Pacific League park, I think it would be very hard to set the home run record.
But I'm talking about this year. Do you think he can get to Bonds territory?
73 or 98 or however many Barry Bonds had.
I think it was 71.
No, it was inflated.
Okay.
In playing 120 games, no, probably not. But I think 66 is a pretty healthy record. I mean, it took Babe Ruth 154 games to reach 60. So,
Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he can get 60 at least. I don't think there's any pressure on him anymore. So he's just going to go back to doing what he was doing before he got to 53. And I was talking to Blanco maybe it was before the All-Star break, and we were watching him take batting practice. And Blanco said he's the strongest guy he's seen here since he's been in Japan. And he said that he's going to set a lot of records because he's learning what the pitchers, basically what you said, Blanco said, he's learning the pitchers, he's learning what they're going to do to him, and he's able to put good swings on the ball and lay off bad pitches. And yeah, I think he's going to be able to get to 61, 62, at least just for the fact that he's not just hacking out there.
Right.
All right. Thank you for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks much, bud.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Yeah, I think just the last thing I want to say about that. When is there ever a last thing I want to say?
I don't know, because we're running out of time.
Okay. Wow. That's cold, bud. Basically, the thing to overlook is that obviously one of the factors here is he came to Japan and he's matured.
Mm.
He was a low-contact, high-impact hitter.
Mm.
And now he's doing both. He's essentially matured into a player who's vastly better. And I think you put him back in the major leagues, people are saying, well, he'd hit 2-something, 220. They see him as the 24-year-old he used to be, but he's new and improved, a new model. I think if he went back to the States, he's in a good home run park. He's a 40 home run guy, hit 250, 260, draw a few walks, but he's happy where he is, and he's making the Swallows look like the smartest team in baseball.
Sure.
And that isn't easy to do.
Ooh. All right, so our featured guest for the podcast this week is Kira Kaaihue. I said it!
Kaaihue. You get stars. You get a star. You get a brownie point or something.
All right. And it was really good to sit down with him. I sat down with him on Wednesday, and that was Home Run 55 night for Coco. But I sat down with Kira in the dugout, and we talked before the game. I asked him about this, obviously, his start. He had four home runs in three games at Yokohama when he came in and started playing with for the first team. He had joined the Carp in June, in the middle of June, I believe, and then he played on the farm a little while, and then he came up, and boom, 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 boom. He has this gaudy start. And yeah, he's been pretty consistent so far. I think as much as you can expect from a guy who comes over in the middle of a season and is facing all these pitchers and trying to get used to a new brand of baseball that he's never seen. He and the combination of he and Brad Eldred in the middle of that lineup, I think, have changed the Carp.
Sure. I think I thought they were a pretty good team without him, but Brad came back pretty healthy in the middle in August,
and,
end of August, and
yeah.
And Keela's had a little, he had that sudden outburst, and I think people adjusted to him, and now he's making he's gaining some ground again, and the Carp are looking real solid.
Yeah, really solid, and just like this interview, it was really good. Let's take a listen to it.
How
All right, our guest this week is Kila from the Hiroshima Carp, and he says his name is?
Kila Ka'aihue.
And I'm going to practice, and then I'll be able to say it soon enough. All right, thank you for joining us this week.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, so you had a really great start to your career in Japan. How did that feel for you, and what was it like?
I came into it not really having a whole lot of expectations. I was just trying to see what I could do to help this team do the best that I could. And I'd spent 3 weeks down in the minor leagues getting ready for it. Getting accustomed to the pitching, the style of baseball and stuff like that. But, I was playing baseball since February in the States. So, it wasn't like I was trying to figure out how to play baseball or anything. But, it was a great start. I'm happy I got off to a really good start. Kind of took a lot of pressure off.
What was it like seeing all those balls fly out of the stadium like that?
Kind of spoiled, I guess. I thought it was going to happen every time after that, but it was a good feeling. It was a great place to start. It's a good park to hit, and it was an easy transition, I'll say.
Did you find yourself trying to repeat that feat?
Well, I knew that you're going to have your highs and your lows, and I was hoping that it was going to kind of stay there for a little while, and it did. I probably had a really good month and a half, but it was fun. That Yokohama series, the next series here in Jingu was fun, and then everything after that has been pretty good.
All right, so how did you end up in Japan? Did you feel you were ready to come here, or did you just not get the offers that you were looking for?
Yeah, I'm sure my story is not different than a whole lot of other foreign guys that are here. I had an out in my contract with the Diamondbacks, and at June 1st, after 2 months, the numbers that I put up for the first 2 months, I had 16 home runs and 51 RBIs, so I was hoping that I was going to get called up. They needed some help, but they wanted to stick with their guys, so I just took my out, and this was the best offer for me and my family that I got.
Now, when you got here, obviously you didn't know much about your team or any of the other players, but how would you assess this team since you've been here?
I love this team. I love the guys on this team. Just in my short time here, I've made some, relationships and some friends with the Japanese guys. The foreign guys that are all here, I knew just about all of them, and we had all had history together. Bullington had been here the longest, and we actually played 2 years in Kansas City together, so that was an easy transition. And then when I was in the minor leagues, Nick Stavanoa was there, and we had a lot of history against each other for many years, from A-ball all the way to Triple-A, playing against each other. So it's been a really good fit for me and my family, and the guys and the coaches and staff on this team have been great to me.
Now, this team hasn't been to the postseason since 1991. Everybody talks about how long it's been. What's the talk among the players?
The players, we're enjoying it, because we're winning and we're playing well. I guess the fans and, some other people might be getting a little tense about the whole thing, and it is creeping in their minds and stuff. But, I'm pretty sure that the team and the guys we're just having fun because we're winning. So, of course, we want to get there. We're doing our best to get there. We still got about 19, 20 games left, and anything can happen. But, you can feel the buzz around Hiroshima that they're hoping that we do it. Everybody's talking about it. So, it's kind of a good time right now.
You said you can feel a tense feeling among the fans. How do you feel that? What are they telling you?
No, not telling me. Just you can, with every win and every time we get closer to it, you can feel how happy they are. And then when we lose, they're hoping that, the next day is better or whatever. But I would just say more the wins. It just seems like when we win now, our fans really get into it.
Now, you've heard about the playoff format, all three games, if the first stage of the playoffs take place at the second place team's home field and all the games are there, and then the next stage is all the games are at the league leader's home ground and they get a one-game advantage. What's your opinion of the way the format is laid out?
Well, a lot of the baseball here, I feel, is a little, not corrupt, but...
His words, not mine.
Yeah. It's not corrupt. It's just, it is, just starting with the draft, it's just, everything's a little different. It's not real, I guess, democratic. It's not American, you know, or whatever you want to use the word, but it does seem like when they do have an opportunity to tip the scales in someone's advantage, that they do. But, you know, that's the style of baseball they do here. That's how they've done it here. It is what it is.
It is what it is. I know that, man. Now, it looks like if you guys finish in third place that you would play the Hanshin Tigers. How do you assess the Hanshin Tigers?
They're a great ball club. They've got good pitching. They've got a lot of really good hitters on that team. They're a good baseball team.
What about the Giants?
The Giants are the same way. They got probably more pitching than Hanshin, I would say. And real lethal hitters. But I think Hanshin's lineup is a little deeper hitting-wise. I mean, I think they have more hitters throughout, but I think that the Giants have way more power than Hanshin, pitching and hitting.
Now, how do you guys match up with the Tigers? I mean, I like your rotation, so I think your rotation matches up, but how do you match up with them in a three-game series?
In a short series, you know, I think anything could happen in those three games. Mikan's been throwing the ball great since I've been here. I mean, I'm happy I don't have to face him. But, Bully's throwing the ball great. Yusuke's been really pitching well lately. Our bullpen is pretty solidified right now, I'd say. I mean, we do have four real good relievers down there, five maybe. And, anything can happen in a three-game series.
Okay. All right. Well, I like your chances. I like the way your rotation matches up against anybody. I like the top three teams in the Central League, the way the rotations match up. I think all of them would be really good series.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I'm just looking forward to getting there first before we even start planning how we're going to match up against anybody. I mean, we still got to take care of some games and, get there, finish up strong.
All right, now this question is from a listener, and he wants to know, who's the toughest pitcher you've faced so far?
So far, the guy who gave me the biggest fit was left-handed pitcher Utsumi with the Giants. And for some reason, I just didn't pick the ball up real well off of him. Just him right now. It seems like I see all the same guys, so I've kind of gotten used to, playing around the league. But I only saw him one time, and, I mean, he was the guy that I remembered the most.
All right. Any other relievers?
I mean, I don't know names. A lot of guys, but I just don't really have names to go with them. I'm still learning people.
All right. That's understandable. You came in the middle of the season. All right, well, good luck. Good luck with the playoff push, and we expect to see you guys in the postseason.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for doing this.
All right, thank you so much, Keena. It was good to sit down and talk to you and get that pronunciation of your name down. And I'm just gonna play it the way you say it. I'm gonna cut and paste it all over the place. So I don't have to try. But I'm getting better. I did promise to practice. I practiced it today at every opportunity.
Yep, I can attest to that. I've heard it. I've heard it pretty much until I'm sick.
Now, I tweeted this on Saturday, but I really felt like the Carp have turned a corner. You know, they swept the team. They had won. I think they won today on Sunday 10-0 over the Giants, and they really have had their problems with the Giants the past few years, maybe the past decade. I don't know.
Well, they beat them 4-2 yesterday, and they beat them 10-0 today.
Yeah, 10-0.
They got a game on Monday, the national holiday here in Japan, Respect for the Elderly Day.
Oh, yes, your favorite.
It is my favorite holiday in Japan.
But, Kila said he kind of got spoiled that he started thinking that he was going to have games like that all the time. Of course, it didn't take him long to discover how good a hitter's park Yokohama Stadium was.
No, that was that one. And as soon as he left there, he came here to Jingu Stadium, which is another pretty good hitter's park. And so he had some adjustments to do after that. After he went back to Mazda Stadium, which is not and but he's done fairly well there. He's his average has dipped a little bit. I would say it's dipped quite a bit, but he's getting. He seems to be getting decent at bats. He seems to have a very positive attitude.
Mm.
I spoke to him when he was at Jingu
mm-hmm.
in his second series, and I asked about the adjustments he made. He made in the farm team, and he said it was getting used to the pitches,
mm.
not necessarily the order of the pitches. The backward, as they say, Japanese pitchers pitch backwards in that it's there are no fastball counts. It's basically establish the breaking ball.
Mm-hmm. And then establish it off the plate.
Exactly. Try to get people to you know, try to get to that 3-2 count when anything is possible. You know, so that is going on. And I expected to hear that, but he said, no, it was getting used to fastballs. And I said, well, what is that? He says, well, they don't run. They're flat and they don't run. They have lifeless fastballs. I think he was talking about the Western League.
Mm.
But he said they don't run. He said they don't run at all. And he said, so he was swinging. When he first got into the Western League, he was swinging where he expected the fastball to be.
Right.
Except he was catching, I'm guessing he was catching it on the end of his bat instead of the sweet spot because the ball wasn't, you know, the ball thrown from a right-hander wasn't running in on him.
Mm-hmm.
So that took him a little getting used to. So it was interesting. I'm glad you got to talk to him. Because he's a great gentleman.
I'm glad I got to talk to him, and I'm glad I got to talk to him about their lineup and about the possibility of those guys going to the playoffs. I really, you know, obviously they're starting to look like a playoff team now.
Yep.
They're playing with a little bit more confidence. I talked to Brian Bullington just before that game that night, just having a chat with Brian Bullington and saying, look, your defense is starting to play better. The guys are not making the defensive mistakes that are costing you games in tight situations. They're loosening up a little bit. And he said, yeah, we really have turned the corner mm-hmm. a little bit. I also talked to Cam Michelio, and he said the same thing. Guys are starting to catch the ball and throw it a little bit better with a little bit more ease and not have that panic feeling, and they're winning some tight games. Of course, they had a blowout today on Sunday, but they're doing the things that they need to do, and they're starting to look like a really good playoff team. I'm actually starting to be concerned that if it finishes like it is, like the standings are now, with the Carp in third place and Hanshin in second, and they have a first round meeting, I think they can obviously pitch with anybody in the league if they're only going to throw three guys in a short series.
As some people might remember, when we had when we went into the All-Star break, I picked the Carp as the team in the Central League that could reach the playoffs based on what they had done in the first half,
mm-hmm.
in that their performance in terms of what they were doing
mm-hmm.
was not represented in the wins and losses or the runs scored. They were basically doing everything they needed to do, things were not falling for them. I felt that if they just kept plugging away, things would turn around. And they've done better than plug away because Keela came in and he wasn't a part of the first half very much.
Right.
And Eldred came back and he didn't do anything in the first half. And another thing that happened, it's kind of funny, and I'll put in a shout out to my buddy Shogo Kimura. This is a 33-year-old career minor leaguer
mm-hmm.
who basically he's blazing fast and he's got a heck of a glove, but he's one of these guys who just never really had an opportunity to play. But they brought him up at the All-Star break, and he's just been on fire. And he's the guy who's, you know, Dobayashi is the invisible man right now.
Yes.
And Kimura's
Prince Araboy is on Prince Bench Boy now.
Yes, indeed. He's a pinch hitter now, and they've got these guys who really want to be there, who are hustling like crazy. And this is turning into a good defensive team.
Yes. Well, I mean
I thought they were a good defensive team.
And you
who
had
made
them,
bad errors.
Right. Who made untimely errors.
Right. Well, they're looking real good.
They're looking good. Kenta Maeda at the top of the rotation, and probably Kan Otaki would start game two, and perhaps Bullington in game three. I like that. I like that. And then I like Nomura starting game four. Starting game one of the next series. Should they move on? So I think they can pitch with anybody in the Central League, and if they certainly get production from Kita and Eldred in the middle of that lineup, because all those guys do throughout that lineup is get on and go for bases.
Right.
And I think they can give people trouble, so it'll be interesting.
It is, yeah. They're fun, and thanks a lot, Kila.
Yep, thank you very much. All right, let's move along here. We have to talk about Mr. Golden Arm pretty quickly.
Who's that?
Masahiro Tanaka.
I remember him.
Of the Rakuten Eagles.
He won a game once.
He won a game once 21 times in a row. And 21 decisions to start the season, and his streak is now, overall, it's up to 20. 25, dating back to last season. And there was something I wanted to look up on the internet that I don't know the pitcher's name, so I shouldn't even mention it, huh?
Carl Hubble.
There have only been five pitchers who have won 100 games before their 25th birthday.
Wow.
And he has, obviously he's not a major league pitcher, but he's joined the group, so I probably won't even mention it, but... Here's a kid who's winning 100 games before his 25th birthday now, and he's hit his form. I don't know. I would have to go and follow the Eagles around and ask them why he's been able to have this much success in winning games, because it's really, you know, when you think about everything that goes into winning a game, you have to pitch well, your team has to score, guys have to catch the ball behind you because you don't strike everybody out. The circumstances have to be right. The other team can't score too much at the end if you happen to be out of the game. So for you to win the game, there's so much to go in that goes into it. And obviously, skipper Seiichi Hoshino, a former pitcher himself, has run out of ways to express and superlatives and ways to express how good this kid is. Even he's in awe. And I don't even know what to say about him anymore other than we just need to talk to the scouts now and say, hey, what's the deal with this guy? What are you guys seeing? Because we're seeing him win when he's pitching well. We're seeing him win when he's not pitching well.
And I'll tell you one thing that I've noticed is that recently he's not been starting games overly well. He looks like he's been outpitched by fairly ordinary pitchers the first four or five innings. But when he gets a lead, it's like when things just mentally turn around. He makes adjustments. He makes adjustments. He makes adjustments. He never panics. You know, this is I've talked in the past about teams who don't give up. You know, if you think you can win, that saves you some of your losses because you're not out of every game that the score might indicate. Things
right.
might bounce your way. Well, he's one of these guys who he's never giving up. He's not going to give up on a batter. He's not going to give up on an inning. And then he shakes off when things don't go right. He shakes off and he goes out there like he's a closer, you know, coming out the next night to nail down a save.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only down three runs in the fifth inning. Bam, bam, bam. And eventually, you know, he keeps giving. He always is, whatever the situation is, he's always going to give his team the best chance he can win with this next batter up at the plate. He seems to make the best. He makes great adjustments. He's been lucky, blah, blah, blah. Yes, he's been lucky, but, you know, you don't do that. I think this is a big talent of his. Mentally, he seems extremely tough.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I was watching the TV broadcast the other day, and this was a completely different game. I think this was the Carp versus the Giants game, and Koichi Taguchi was the analyst that day. Mm. And he doesn't even know. He's a former catcher.
He's a former catcher,
and
he also was a former batting coach for the Eagles.
That's correct. And he was saying, look, I don't know what it is either. The guy can hit spots. He can throw his pitches where he wants to, and he knows how to keep batters off balance. But he said, but for you to have a stretch like this, it takes more than that. And then he said, it just seemed like they've run out of reasons to give for his success. So what he said, Taguchi said, was the way Tanaka's eating, his eating habits, that the team has a nutritionist, and even when they go on the road, he measures out all the calories that for the food that he's going to eat. I mean, they've turned to this now. I think they're going to dissect his entire life to find out why
watch
this
out.
Guy...
You better watch out. They're not chasing around with scalpels to do a vivisection and cut him
open for the sake of humanity.
Or the, for the sake of baseball, right? Because
we're going to learn from this kid.
Well, you look, and obviously the rumors are that he's going to be posted. And I also talked to a scout the other day I met and asked him, I just happened to ask him about Malkoon, and he said, if he gets posted, and they will use the rules. If they don't come up with a new posting system, they'll use the rules that are already in existence. He said if they do post this kid, a lot of teams that are big spenders are going to go after him, and it's going to be the high-priced players. It's going to be the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, teams like that. Maybe even the Rangers would be interested.
Orioles, maybe, yeah.
Because this guy is a winner. You know, more than anything else, he's a winner. And they're not going to worry. I mean, obviously he's got a decent enough stuff, but whatever he doesn't know, whatever he needs to find to make himself successful over in the States, he'll do it. He'll find it. He'll discover it. He'll
find out what he can, yeah.
And that's what... That's why I say, winning matters. Winning matters, and it matters especially with pitchers. I mean, they talk about guys who haven't made the Hall of Fame who are pretty decent pitchers, and they always point to the win-loss record, and everybody comes back to that. It's the win-loss record. When all these sabermetrics and all these things that are introduced in the game now, people say, hey, look, this guy's got 300 wins. He should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's how it goes.
Well, first of all, for people who do sabermetrics, wins are very important. They're just not important. They're not something that you look at to measure a pitcher's performance in 1 year.
But over the course of
a career, it's hard to find anything more important for the simple reason that conditions change. But teams, the total balance of wins and losses is always the same. So if you're winning vastly more than other guys over a period of time, it's not just, your park's helping you or the manager was good for you.
Right. I'm with you. I just say winning matters because that's what the goal is when guys take the field, and that's what they want. I mean, players, if you ask the players, they don't really worry about who walks the most and who has the best whip and all that stuff. They worry about who makes the best pitches when the game's on the line because they want to win.
I'm not a big fan of whip. I like that artificial creamer on my food.
Boom.
Whatever.
Extra whip.
Whip it good, baby.
Oh,
I wanted to Devo a little bit on you.
Oh, I can't remember any other songs except for Whip It Good. And
that's good enough.
I can't get no satisfaction.
Oh,
the remake.
That was a good one.
The
okay.
remake, yeah. All right. One quick note about the Eagles. Hiroaki Shimauchi injured his shoulder. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. So it looks like he's lost for the season. And this is kind of big because he's the guy who essentially pushed the center fielder, I can never say this guy's name cleanly.
Repeat after me.
Hijirisawa. I can say it, but I can't say it live on the air. How's that? Hijirisawa, he basically pushed him to the side, and he's really been an effective guy, batting ninth for them.
He has.
He's been really good for them. He's been decent defensively. He's been clutch for them at times for them in big situations. He's going to be sorely missed. That's a big deal for them.
They have guys, and Hijirisawa is like, okay, second chance. I'll take that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're replacing him with a guy you don't know what he's going to give you. They know everything. This is a proven player, so Hijirisawa has another chance.
The other thing I would mention is that we had a really bizarre thing happen last night at Jingu Stadium.
Quickly.
And Matt Merton crashed into the Swallows' number one catcher.
Blew him up. That wasn't just a crash.
He smashed into him. He gave him an elbow when he came in trying to score. He was out by 10, 15 feet.
Not 15. Don't exaggerate.
Okay, he was out by 10 feet.
I'll give you 10.
Thank you, John. Mr. Metric. Okay, he was out by a good margin. He gave him an elbow. And they got a little tangled up in the collision, and Aikawa, who had a subluxated joint at the top of his shoulder and was out for about 7 weeks earlier this season after
the
collision.
Was that like a cracked collarbone to you and me?
No, we're getting there. That's on the joint that attaches the shoulder to the collarbone.
All right.
Okay. And his teammate, Masahiko Tanaka was out for 5 months after a May collision with Matt Merton. And Aikawa came up, wasn't taking any more of that. You know, I'm fed up and I'm not going to give any more. And he shoved Merton away. Merton shoved back once. Aikawa shoved back twice. Merton, realizing who's been thrown out of a game this year for the first time in Square, started backing away, raised his hands, and tried to get out of the situation.
And immediately I tweeted, "Don't run away, man. You started this."
And he got thrown out of the game. And
Both of them.
They both got thrown out of the game. And Matt was suspended. I wanted to talk to him today about different things, but he was suspended. And I have to think that when you... I know that the commissioner's job is to decide these suspensions and these fines, but I would think part of the commissioner's job is investigating more than just reading what the umpire said in his report. If you looked at a video, you would see that what Merton did was...
baseball.
What he did was... look, the runner is allowed to give a forearm and knock the catcher's head off if he's got the ball, because that's what the rules say. He can leave the catcher broken and bent on the ground. That's the way the rules are written.
He can do a Clay Matthews on Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, I heard that. So anyway, yeah, he can do all that because the rules allow. And so when the catcher takes umbrage and when he doesn't do anything about it, he's out of the game. I think that was completely overreaction by the umpires, overreaction by the commissioner, Ryozo Kato.
What was the reason given for the suspension?
The suspension because it was a second ejection for violent behavior in a game.
Is that the rule?
Apparently. It's the rule. It's the new rule.
It's the rule that got him suspended.
Indeed.
That is bizarre. Well, we'll have to delve into that. And it seems like we've been talking to Matt Merton a lot of times about these incidents on the field. But he's such a great guy. I got to believe he's partly being victimized here. That was just baseball. Sorry, that was a baseball play.
Unfortunately, that was just baseball.
Okay. All right, well, let's go to just fielding questions.
Okay.
All right, Dave in Baltimore sends us another question. Thank you very much, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
He says,
Orioles.
So I think you guys are pretty much in agreement that there's not a chance that the Central League MVP is going to be awarded to a guy on a last-place team, even if that guy is having an historic season, especially since the CL MVP has always gone to someone on the first-place team, even if the best candidate on that team is a middle reliever.
Wow. Who might that be?
So, you might think.
Wow.
What do you think the chances are that Ballantyne might win the Shodiki Award this year instead?
Great question, Dave. Which forced me to go to my official baseball guide and look up and find the two times when a Central League MVP was given to somebody who wasn't on a pennant winner.
Mm-hmm. Two times.
Two times and same person. And if I tell you home run record...
Yeah, it was Sadaharu Oh in 64.
And 1974.
And 74.
Now, 1964, when he set the home run record, the Giants finished third place 11 games behind the Hanshin Tigers.
Mm.
But setting the home run record was good enough for them at that time. Okay, 1974, the Giants were not really out of it. They lost the pennant the Chunichi Dragons had more ties. The Giants had more losses.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants had more losses and lost on a very, very minor winning percentage point. The Giants won more games, but they lost more games.
Right.
So they were almost a first-place team, and it was Sadaharu Oh, who at that time was a massive veteran star. So... could Ballantyne win it? I think this is possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so convinced that he won't be the MVP. I just think at this point, we've all seen what the Japanese media do when it comes to this vote, and And since it's just not Jim and me voting.
And I don't get a vote anymore.
Oh, that's right.
Thank Kyoto for that.
You know, a lot of people can't define what value is. They can't agree on what the definition is. So as it pertains to the competition and the economics and all that stuff aside, I think it's probable that they might lean toward giving him the award. I brought it up in the press conference tonight, and just to show maybe that the...
I think that was good, yeah.
But the attitude, the translator didn't even translate that I said MVP. So I think that that attitude permeates throughout the Japanese culture. I don't think it's just the media.
I think we've talked about this before, and I talked to reporters about this the last couple of years because I had in 2010 I voted for Shinosuke Abe as the MVP. Mm-hmm. The Giants did not win the league. Abe did not rank among the batting leaders because mm-hmm. he was about 15 at bats short. But what he did in that limited time was amazing. There was no doubt that he was the best player in the league. But he got one first place vote, no seconds, no thirds.
Mm.
I think that's what got kicked me out of the voting.
Yeah.
Anybody who votes for a guy who doesn't rank in the batting leaders now are not on a winning team. So I talked to the reporters and basically said, we can't vote for a guy who's not on the winning team because if you do, people are going to think funny things about you.
Right.
You can't excuse it.
Mm.
If it's the guy's on the winning team, you've always got an out.
Yep.
If the guy wins 20 games, if he sets a home run record, then you have an excuse for voting for them. So
right.
These guys are looking. Japan is looking for excuses.
Hmm. But the Shōriki Award, I think, you know, Valentin has done something this year for baseball. He's brought, obviously, when I came to the park on Wednesday, it was a last place team playing a third place team. And 10, 12 years ago, this game would have been empty, maybe a few people, but the fact that there is a home run record in play, I mean, even on Wednesday, it wasn't even filled up when he tied the record and obviously had a chance to break it. But he's got people caring about games for a last-place team. He's lifted the spirits of the Swallows fans.
Well, fans all over the country,
and fans all over the country because they want to watch. I mean, obviously in the States when there's some record involved and you're watching one game, they'll switch to a Barry Bonds who has a chance to break a record or a Mark McGwire has a chance to break a record or something. And this game wasn't even on TV.
Okay.
It was on cable TV, so it wasn't on free TV. It was hard to get to and all is that hard to find on TV, but the spirit of the nation and the baseball world has been lifted by everything he's done. It's the reason the award was created was for something like this. That
it was.
Bringing people together because of baseball.
Well, the award is for who contributed the most to Japanese baseball. Now, here's the story behind the award. Essentially, it seemed like an objective thing, in that it was given to basically the biggest name in the game that year.
Mm.
And it was like that until 2001. Now, in a year when we had a person who... We had a player who embraced Japanese culture and who embraced the game and learned Japanese and hit 55 home runs, they decided at that point to start giving the award to the Japan Series winning manager.
Mm.
Now, I'm a fan of Tsutomu Wakamatsu, but he was in no way, shape, or form the person who hit the most for Japanese baseball in 2001. And the person I'm talking about was Tuffy Rhodes. And I'm going to come out and say it. The reason Tuffy Rhodes didn't win the award was he had a little too much color.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. Since then, it has always gone to a manager. And this would be the year, as I said, in 2001, I wrote a column about it. This is the year it should go to a foreigner in Tuffy Rhodes. There couldn't be any better choice. He was a gentleman. Of course, he was a gentleman who had some unsavory news about him published in a weekly scandal sheet.
Mm.
So maybe that was part of the issues. He wasn't the kind of foreigner they wanted. Well, Valentin is probably, you know, he brought his mother to the game, you know, his... how do you, you – it's hard to top that. He probably is the kind of foreigner they want to give it to. So we'll see if it's a foreigner thing, a color thing, an attitude thing, or a that's the old way, this is the new way thing, or it's a Yomiuri thing.
Yeah, but great insight by you, Dave. I think that's a great call on your part.
Brilliant question. Thanks, and keep the questions coming, not only to Dave, but all you people out there. We love to hear from you, especially the key word there is here.
Because the MP3s are awesome.
They are.
And Dave, I know you have an iPhone, so hit the button, dude.
Wow.
All right.
He only smacked me like that.
No, I hit everybody. if you throw pitches over the plate, I hit them. All right, send those MP3s and emails to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll address them on the show. Thank you very much for listening, and from lovely record-setting Jingu.
Dark. Jingu.
But cooling off here.
Cooling off, and reporters still here working away on their Valentine stories.
That's right.
Okay.
We bid you farewell until next week. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your baseball.